Welcome to Girl Flower Podcast with Vic and Jess. We will be having conversations and inspirational chinwags with florists and growers to keep you company in your workspaces, in the car, over a cuppa, or wherever you like to listen. We hope to help you along on your own floral journey.
Hello and welcome to season 4 of Girl Flower Podcast. We hope you're all well. It's been, well, it feels like it's been a lifetime since we last released an episode. But we're back and hopefully back with a bang. We've been busy behind the scenes recording lots of amazing conversations with all of your favourite creatives. Jess and I have been busy with our own work. Jess's field is absolutely flourishing and weddings are back on for me. So it's, it's been a crazy old time and we are sure that you are feeling quite the same as us, super excited, a little jaded and tired, but yeah, isn't it great to be back? So this week we are in conversation with Melissa and Amy from Jam Jar Flowers. Jam Jar Flowers are a floral design studio based in South London. We have mentioned Jam Jar quite a bit on our various episodes and we're super excited to be speaking with them, Melissa and Amy, today. If you haven't checked out Jam Jar Flowers and also Jam Jar Edit, their botanical pressings, flower pressings, then you've really got to go and look immediately. We also had the pleasure of seeing some of Jam Jar's gorgeous work for British Flowers Week, which was incredible, and also they are currently exhibiting at the Tithe Barn at Tyme in Gloucestershire for The Nature of Tyme, which is a press botanicals exhibition. It looks absolutely stunning. It goes on till the 12th of September, and Jess and I are gonna be getting down there as soon as possible. The images look incredible. And Melissa and Amy talk a little bit about the exhibition and their plans for it, because we spoke with them quite some time ago. Anyway, listen, we know you're gonna enjoy this episode, and yeah, it's great to be back.
We're so excited to be chatting with you both today.
Thanks for having us. We feel so very honoured.
Well, honestly, we couldn't not have you both, because it seems like every other episode we do mention you. So
I've heard us mentioned a few times. I've been loving your podcast. It's so great.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, and it seems like everybody is loving you as well. Everybody's aware of you or has had some experience of your work, and you know, it's just lovely that this that everyone feels quite connected in a way when they all start mentioning each other, don't they?
Yeah, that's the thing about the floristry industry. It's very supportive, I feel. Everybody kind of gets behind each other and
I mean, I think that's fascinating about the floristry industry. Both Amy and I came out of a fashion background and we thought those were quite kind industries, really, till we came into the floristry industry. I realised...
Let's start with you then, Melissa. Can you give us just a little bit of background about your working life? So you say you started in fashion. So can you explain to us how you then came into floristry after? Well, tell us about the fashion and then floristry.
Well, I started after I left. I went to drama school and I realised no one was going to allow me to direct the Tempest at the National immediately. So I took a quick sidetrack and began representing photographers. And then I did some time styling, working in a studio with a photographer. And then I started casting for him. And I went into a model agency and it just looked so fun. Everybody sitting around a round table, everybody was achingly cool. I thought I'd quite like to do that. And I did that. And then the model agency I was working for went bust, and I started my own model agency when I was 26. And I don't know really now what the hell I thought I was doing, but it kind of worked. And then I continued doing that. It was called Take Two, pretty high-end fashion model agency. And I carried on doing that for 27 years while I raised my children and got married and did all the things that I did. And then I stopped, closed the agency. My partner and I closed the agency in 2009. And I just thought I'd do some flowers to keep me from going mad, you know. And that's when I started Jam Jar, just from my kitchen table at home. And I mean, I think there were lots of I thought I was doing something completely different, but it's not really different. It's the flowers are as beautiful and joyous to look at as those beautiful models were. And I feel just as fond of them as I did of the models in almost the same kind of personal way. But, you know, it was something that I thought I was doing something completely different and found that it wasn't completely different. It's a different milieu, obviously, but in fact, the skills that you need to run any business are identical, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's getting on with people, it's sales, it's loving beautiful things, it's conveying your love of beautiful things to other people, making people trust you, running a team, all the same, really. So yeah. I was, you know, surprised and delighted by that, really.
How comes it was flowers for you that you decided to choose for your next business? Was that, were you just playing with flowers initially? Did you have got a beautiful garden that you could cut from? What kind of drove you into that decision?
Well, I grew up in the most beautiful garden. I've never really seen a lovelier one. And that sort of walled gardens round a sort of creaking, falling apart house, but amazing gardens. And my father was a brilliant gardener, but also beyond the walled gardens, there were woods. And actually all I could long for at the time was to get up to London and go shopping and things. But I think it had a massive influence on me. And my grandparents were amazing gardeners. And I just had a absolute passion for flowers since I was a real little girl. And I've got a small garden in Brixton, which I love dearly, but I love it a lot less since I've become a florist.
Busman's holiday,
isn't it? It's a rod to my back now. So, you know, it just seemed like something that was kind to do, that was that would be lovely, that would be kind of easier than the whole model game. And in fact, it isn't easier, but it is a lot kinder and a lot more thoughtful. So that's how it happened, really.
And so
then, you know, I had to find a studio because my husband was like, if I come into this kitchen once more and find it in this place, I'm actually leaving you. So I found a studio and then I found Amy, which was really the best thing that happened to me.
So how did you two meet?
So I was a little bit lost in my life and career, I guess. So a little bit of where I came from, I did fine art at uni, and you've interviewed someone else. I think it might've been Anna, who said she did fine art as well and was completely lost when she came out. And so was I. So I was never really going to be an artist, but I just loved the creative side of fine art and all that went with it. So that's what I pursued. And then did loads of different jobs. So I came and moved to London, did a bit of kind of art department for film and TV, did a bit of helping out at Selfridges doing the VM and stuff, and did all sorts of stuff. And then got a job at with Nick Knight. So I worked for Nick Knight for his show studio for 3 or 4 years. So that kind of propelled me into this mad world of fashion, which was amazing. It was an incredible experience, actually, working for Nick. He's one of the most kind of driven, creative and passionate people that I've worked for, apart from when I met Melissa, who's exactly the same. I did that for a while. And then after Nick kind of moved on to sort of push, like kind of, you know, further my career, I guess, but kind of made a few weird decisions and ended up on the agency side of fashion, which I just didn't see any of the creative side of fashion anymore. And it was a mad job to take. And I don't quite know how I ended up there, but it was really stressful and not creative at all anymore. And I just didn't know why I was there or what I was doing anymore. And I was just totally lost. And the flower thing for me, I guess, I don't know. I didn't ever grow up with the beautiful garden that Melissa grew up with. You know, I had a lovely garden. I grew up in the Northwest. But it wasn't about that for me. It was more, I guess, loved being outside as a kid, always have done. we were up in the Lake District, places like that, that I'm kind of obsessed with. But it was probably Nick that sort of sparked an interest in flowers for me. He was always shooting flowers in the studio. There was always kind of, I remember him coming to the studio, opening his boot of his car, and he had the whole car boot full of garden roses. I'd never seen anything like it. I'd never smelled anything like that before. So it must have been him that sparked it off, I think. And then, yeah, when I was totally lost in my job and not knowing what I was doing, I just thought flowers might be quite fun and might be a nice thing to go and explore. And I was really kind of at the end of my tether there. I needed to get out. I was so stressed and not having a nice time. And then I think I just spoke to a few people, and a few people had mentioned Jam Jar. It just came up in conversation. And someone said, I think I've got a mate there or whatever. And went down to one of your open studios, I think. So twice a year we open our studios, and the whole yard where we are, where our studio is, opens up their studios. Everyone kind of sells their wares or whatever. And it's a really nice social event. And yeah, I went down to one of those and met Melissa and just chatted about where I was at and what I wanted to do. And yeah, a bit about the fashion thing. And we seemed to just click a little bit, I think. And she said, I'll come and do an internship. And I was 29 and thinking, oh God, I'm starting again. Like,
that's a big step.
I don't know. It was hard. It was a tough decision, but my family was so supportive of it because they saw how miserable I was. They were just like, oh, please just do it, because we can't stand looking at you like this. So that's what I did. I went and worked for a month at Jam Jar. I loved it.
And then the rest was history.
Yeah.
No, she slid away again.
Fashion week.
Went to Fashion Week, you know, booking models, I think, Ames, weren't
you? Well, when I went back to my old job, so I used to basically, at the agency, I was a producer. So production is basically my sort of background in the fashion industry, I guess. So I was looking after stylists and hair and makeup artists. So I went back to earn some money at Fashion Week and was back to my old desk having a stressful time.
Did so that I kind of hammer it home that you really wanted to be at Jam Jar? Yeah.
I rang her up. I said,
The girl that was sort of doing production for her at the time had left.
She was about to leave. So she was doing, you'd be surprised how much production there is, really, isn't there, in floristry? I think people think about floristry, you just go to the market, make beautiful flowers, send them out. But actually, if you're doing a big event or something, as you well know, you know, there's a huge amount of production. And I had this girl who was a really good producer, and she was going off, called Alice, and she was going off to New York. And I thought, my God, I'm going to really miss her. I'm get Amy back. So I rang up Amy, and she was like, oh, I don't know. Offered her a pitiful salary. And then she came in, and the first thing she said to me was, I've got this possible job for Mulberry, doing the invitations for their spring summer fashion show, so spring summer 15.
Quite pleased myself with that one.
And so I was like, oh, great, you know. And we went off to Mulberry, and they said, you know, we're going to do pressed flowers. We want pressed flowers. We had a beautiful little invitation pack with a observer book of wildflowers, some of their lovely fabrics, which were all based on things like ami and delphiniums and all very beautiful cornflowers and everything. Can you come and press the flowers for us to go inside as an insert into these books? And we said, yeah, of course we can do that. And then we went away, and Amy said, can you press flowers? I don't think it's very difficult, which of course it isn't, but it's a bit more difficult than we were anticipating. And we sort of got, and then I said to them, well, so long as we've got a month, it's not a problem. They were like, well, we haven't, we got like 10 days. Oh. And we never pressed a flower professionally before. So that was, what would you call that? something by fire.
Baptism by fire.
Baptism by fire.
Oh my God, I'm imagining your workshop stacked up with books, with paper, and everyone just pressing down hard.
Everything, the irons were out, they were in the oven, there was all sorts of stuff going on.
Because it's easy to press a flower if it's just for you. Right? Because it doesn't matter if there's any kinks or tears, or you're like, yeah, yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah,
but they were sending out 700 invitations.
Yeah, but there have to be.
What was it, Amy? 5,000 flower heads.
Yeah. They have to be perfect. They have to be in bulk. You've never done it before. You know, and that's the thing. When you're producing for someone like Mulberry, it has to be perfection, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That would have blown my mind.
Yeah,
it would have blown my mind.
And we were there in the end, didn't we?
There were a few sleepless nights, especially when they ran out of Amy in the market and we went into Bloomies. And I said, okay, Ron, I need another 100 stems of Amy or 200 stems of Amy. And he said, Amy's finished.
Oh,
what?
Yeah, they do.
Amy's over. Luckily it came back, but we were trying to press Amy Visnaga, you know, which is much more juicy. And that didn't work at all. And that was quite tearful, wasn't it?
So was that one of your first kind of commissions for a brand that you'd undertaken as Jam Jar?
No. It one of the strange things about Jam Jar is, you know, all the time since I started getting proper jobs, they were always came from the fashion industry. Amazing. And I almost, not always, but a lot. And I think that's because, you know, there's a way of speaking that people understand, a kind of short hand that people have. I think when a fashions person speaks to somebody else from fashion, you understand each other. It there's a way of speaking. And Talina, our head florist now, also is an ex-model agent. And, you know, it's strange, but we do have a lot of fashion clients and always have done. And it's annoying because I threw away my entire mailing list when I finished.
Oh.
I thought, I don't want anything more to do with this business. I just had 5,000 names on a mailing list, just chucked it out.
Oh my goodness me. God, what you'd pay for that now?
But Talina and I didn't join until later. So I you started in 2009, did you?
Well, 2009 at home.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I turned over 12,000 years pounds the first year. So, you know, it wasn't exactly big business. But it was 2011, I think, or 12 when I got the studio.
Yeah, 2014 I came along.
So the studio that you moved in after coming from your kitchen table, was that the studio you're in now?
Yeah.
Amazing.
But we've got another one as well.
Oh, I've got two.
We've got two. And it's a great yard. Have you ever been to that yard?
No, no. We really want to go and just see your window. We just want to see the window.
So sweet, yeah.
Oh.
It's an old Victorian kind of craft maker's yard. So, it started by it being craft makers, and it still is, really. There's loads of creatives, all different people making various things in there, woodworkers and lute makers and dressmakers and... Yeah, it's a sweet place. But
Frank Bowling is there, has been for ages, you know, who's the amazing artist who does the drip paintings, and he's just been knighted, and he was the first black Royal Academician. So there's some interesting people in our yard.
Mm. Yeah, a real destination, because you do hold a lot of workshops and things as well, don't you? People come in, like all sorts of workshops, one-to-ones, and then obviously you've got all your flower pressing, and is it Cynotope?
Cynotype. Doing them this weekend, actually. We sell a little kit, so I took one home for my niece, and we've been doing them this weekend. It was really fun,
nice.
Yeah, it's good. So we work with a photographer called Kasia, who's in the yard as well. She uses really old school photography techniques. So we started doing like a joint workshop where we flower press in the morning, and then we make cyanotypes in the afternoon with Kasia.
Sounds so fun.
When I got there, there was no office space. Everyone kind of just worked on an iPad at the studio table. So we've now grown out of that a little bit and moved on and into another studio, which is in the same yard. So that's our kind of office space and where all the admin and stuff gets done. And then that's also our Jam Jar edit studio. So where we do all the pressing and the stock and everything.
Amazing. I really want to dig into Jam Jar Edit, but what I would like to do before we get there, I'd love to hear about Jam Jar before you got together and how different it is now by having two of you pushing at it.
Well, I think, I mean, it grew so slowly and imperceptibly from an idea that I had to make just flowers for people's offices. I was thinking I might, you know, I was quite old, I was 55 when I started. I was thinking I might just work 2 days a week, you know, one day admin and one day taking flowers around to people's offices, go to the market really early. And then I spend the rest of the week sort of lying around, watching telly, doing my garden. It started like that, but it just escalated so fast. And I think we were incredibly lucky that when I thought of the name Jam Jar Flowers, it was because when I was a kid, we used to go out and pick flowers, and honestly wasn't very much else to do except make camps and pick flowers. So, and I loved the flower picking part. So I used to bring them home and make jam jars up on the kitchen table, and you know, it was a great pleasure of my childhood. And then I remember my dad used to grow in the vegetable garden, used to grow flowers for my mother to cut. We weren't allowed to cut anything from the garden, so didn't want the garden spoiled. And there was a bed of tulips that he'd grown, and my mum went out, she was having a big dinner party, and she cut the entire bed of tulips, 200 tulips, the whole lot, and she put them in a huge old brass coal scuttle that we had in the house. And I remember thinking, my God, that is stunning. That was the most stunning thing I'd ever seen, but also so extravagant and sort of crazy. But what I liked about it was so simple, just tulips, just a stunning big container. And I did some floristry courses. I did one with Jane Packer, which was a lot of Oasis and stuff, and it didn't really work for me. And then I did one with Paula Pryke, who isn't necessarily my style at all, but learnt so much about technique and about how to look after flowers. And she's very generous sharing her business knowledge, which I really appreciated. But all the time, a lovely florist called Anita Everard, who was teaching us floristry, and all the time when she was making up her stuff, I kept thinking, perfect, perfect, stop. And then more would be being pushed in, you know. And there was a moment where there was just sort of twisted willow in the water and twisted willow coming out of the water, and thinking, this is literally perfect. And that's what I like, is that very simple, beautiful single stem stuff. I think that's still my favorite. But you know, you develop and you mature, and since Talina's been there, we've really been looking at much more elaborate, but a much less simple take on flowers. It's just not just flowers plonked in a jam jar. These days it's more you know, thoughtful and constructed, and but still I like to keep everything within the seasons, and so does Talina and so does Amy, and to let every flower head have its space or its ability to shine. And I think when I first started, there was a whole lot, I mean, a lot of flowers were tropical and they were in those enormous martini glass. You're probably too young. But
the we're not. We remember.
The bloody great ball of Oasis, and everything stuck in like a sort of, you know, those cheese hedgehogs. That
yes.
And I just honestly thought that was vile. And I thought there was a place for something much more simple. And it seemed to talk to people at that time. I think there was a big turn away from people just getting too obsessed with screens and luxury. And the people wanted to go back to a simpler time when people made things with their hands, picked things in the garden. Farmers markets were becoming really popular. I mean, at that time, Borough Market went from being three tables on a Saturday to the enormous thing it is today. I think people had a need suddenly to reconnect with nature, reconnect with their hands, come away from the screen. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was on point there, but I was working, as Amy says, off an iPad. up till, by the way, we're writing a book at the moment, so I had to move on to a computer. Yeah. But Amy, then Amy, and well, Alice first, and then Amy arrived. And they were just like, you know, you can't really work like this anymore, Melissa, holding everything in your head, you know, everything in my head. And you have to share the information. And so Amy basically organises me, but she's also got a really, it's not the same aesthetic as mine, but I love what she loves. She loves what I love. But I would say our houses are quite different, but we're appreciate the other. So, and then Talina again has got another vibe going on. So you kind of, the whole thing, you know, you have to keep growing, otherwise you stop. Mm. And I'm quite old, so I need young people who have exciting things around me.
So Amy, when you joined, what did you bring to the table? What are the bits that you feel that you helped push forward?
Oh, I think it's just a bit of organisation, to be honest. I went in there thinking, I'm going to be a florist. This is going to be great. And I had done like one evening course somewhere at Covent Garden or something and thought, this is really fun, I'm going to do this. So, but when I got in there, it was much more than that. I was a producer, and it was those skills just totally transferred, as Melissa said before. So although I'd learned flowers on the job, that wasn't my main thing. It was more to get structure, to get, you know, to organize jobs, to do the whole process. I guess working with a really small team, which is what we are, you kind of have to do everything. So you've got to know how a job works from start to finish. You know, you've got to, it's the whole process. So I think I just bought a bit of organization, got some laptops, got an office space. Started doing kind of, you know, job sheets for jobs and things. So yeah, it was all a bit of
spreadsheets. Absolutely revolutionary. Never seen one in my life before.
I knew a spreadsheet could be so helpful. So yeah,
and the cost stinks. I mean, it's terribly. I mean, I do know money is really important. Like how much you're going to spend, what you're going to mark up, how much profit you're going to make at the end of it. But I'd done that instinctively. I'm quite good at doing it.
Melissa's brilliant at so kind of costings and budgets and knowing and quantities is she's really amazing at. But I need that to be on a spreadsheet to understand it to get everyone else on the same page.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have that organisational element put in, and it must be nice as it, obviously you all bring something different to the table, because if you're a whirlwind of creativity and you've got everything in your head, or you're writing it down on a bit of scrap paper, that's what I do. It's so useful to have someone to come in, organize all your muddle and get it so it's completely comprehensible to the whole team.
But it was just fascinating for me. I didn't have any idea how creative, how kind of incredible the floristry industry could be until I was there and I was in it. I just had no idea. I thought I'd just be making bunches of flowers and it would be a lovely, I'd have a lovely time. But the jobs that we were working on straight away were just mad. Like I just didn't know that was a thing in the floristry industry. You know, we'd be working with having to work with set builders to build a set for a certain job or whatever. And it's all of these things that I was interested in and that I'd been kind of wanting to do. It all sort of came together in this really nice place.
Because you do a lot of kind of big pieces and installations, don't you? And I know you've got your delivery service as well. So is your studio open as a shop as well? Or are you just kind of, or no?
So, no, we've never been a shop. And thank goodness, I honestly don't know how people make money with the shop. Like, good on them if they can, because it's just brilliant. But no, we try not to have any wastage, which really helps not having a shop. So we don't have to be public facing. We don't have to have the doors open all the time. We're just a studio and we buy for what we've already sold, basically. Okay. So we either buy for an event or we buy for deliveries that are 2 days later. So we try not to have any wastage. And now with the flower pressing, any wastage that we might have, if we've got flowers left over, we press them. So that's the kind of idea.
Okay, so let's talk about the development of Jam Jar Edit and how that came to fruition. Because I know that when we spoke to Graham, Graham Corbett, he said it would been a kind of a little thing going on, and it had taken quite a few years to really get it going.
Yeah.
Was that because you guys were just so busy?
Just got so much on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. We were mad busy. But Melissa wanted to do it for a while, hadn't you? And it's, you've mentioned the shop window, so our studio has a shop window, basically. But when Melissa first moved into the studio, that shop window was really open and exposed, and I don't think you had much privacy there. So what she did was built shelves in the window with scaffolds, really simple shelves. And she had a huge collection of glassware, so vintage bottles and things, all in different colours. And that they became displayed in the window, and that became a kind of bit of a...
It's iconic. Yeah. It's iconic, definitely.
Oh, that's nice.
It gives you a bit of screening. It gives you some very interesting light in the afternoon. But it also, it's intriguing. You know, people walk past, is it a shop? Is it an apothecary? What is it? And then it says jam jar flowers bespoke above it, which is kind of, you know, a bit puzzling to most people, I think. So people always peering in through the window.
loads of people stop and say, can I buy those? Are they for sale? You know, and there's all the other things like the cigar press that we sell. Melissa had found one of those years ago, and it was like, oh, actually, it was the rose globe, wasn't it, where it started? So Melissa had an old vintage rose globe, which is a glass globe that you fill with water, and it's got a kind of rubber frog on the end of it, which is the seal. You put a flower stem inside it, fill it with water, and then it's just this beautiful kind of, it makes this kind of magnification of the flower inside, and it's beautiful. And Melissa had always thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could source those and maybe we could sell them? So I think you'd always wanted to do a shop. And when I came along, that was really exciting for me. I thought that was a brilliant idea. So we just started to think about it and think about how we could maybe make that work and what we'd start with. And so we just thought a few simple products to start with would be great. And we could sell it online and see how it went. So yeah, we started with the rose globe. There's a cigar press that we'd use for various events and weddings, which is another thing that you'd found in an old junk shop, which is just an old cigar press. And she drilled the holes out, put test tubes in there for flowers. And it was a lovely thing.
I always quite like things that you only need a very few flowers for. Mm. I always think like London gardeners, you know, I hate going into my garden and cutting everything in sight. I like going pick one rose, put it in the rose globe, put it on the middle of the table, looks fantastic. Or, you know, the cigar press, you probably get away with 30 stems and 10 of them could be buttercups or cow parsley or something, you know. So I just like things that give people the opportunity to make something really beautiful and stunning that people will remark on, but isn't like costing them £1 million to do, you know.
I think that's quite important, isn't it? And also you don't need a massive design skill. You just pick the few things and you've instantly created something very stylish.
Yeah. I love that. And I love, you know, sharing that with people. Although people still do get the cigar press quite wrong, you know, because the thing about varying the heights, you know, to get that kind of wavy look. And then you sometimes see them and they're like, 12 rows. But on the whole, you know, I think that is kind of, yeah, that was what we wanted to do, was to have some sort of unusual vessels, anything botanical that just fascinated us. You know, these little things where you grow an acorn. And I mean, actually, we did that in Campari bottles in the studio, and you know, put the acorns in, let the roots go down into the water, and then a little oak leaf comes up like 3 months later. It's love completely that. Thrilling to me. I love things like that.
Who was drinking all the Campari?
Last Campari.
That's my worst drink, I have to say. It's the worst one.
You know that little triangular bottle? Actually stunning bottle they make them in. I put something on Twitter by mistake, went into a Twitter fest.
Oh,
because Campari was so exciting, because nobody really tweets about Campari much.
You got Campari trending again. Happy days.
Yeah.
But yeah, the, the, pressed flower thing for the edit really came from, so when we first started doing pressed flowers, we were asked by Rakes Progress magazine to go and do a pop-up. So they were having a pop-up sort of around Christmas time in Floral Street in Covent Garden. And they asked us, it was us and a few kind of handful of other florists. They were going to get florists to come in and do an installation for the exhibition, and the exhibition would run for 3 months. So there was kind of florists coming and going, and we thought, oh, if we do something that could actually last for the 3 months and we don't have to go in and refresh it every day, that would be great, because we can just be there for the whole exhibition. We just have to install it once and then we're kind of done and it'll look lovely. So we thought pressed flowers would be great for that. So then we can put them in and stay there. And that's the first time that we thought we had this huge wall.
I was just about to say, was that the wall?
It was, oh, yeah. We did a roll of wall
stunning
paper. And then we did the whole huge wall with one frame with something like 52 openings for A3 sized pressings. So that's the first time we did the A3 sized pressings. And then that led us on to thinking, actually, these would be a really good item to sell as a product. So that's where that started. And then it was a case of kind of finding the right frames for them, which took me a while. But we just wanted to do something with pressed flowers that was super minimal and really clean and really crisp, and kind of just to modernize it a little bit. So that's when we started doing them in their little black frames.
Mm. And I think you've completely nailed it. You have completely nailed it, because it is a kind of traditional thing, flower pressing, yeah, isn't it? But it is super modern. I love that it's kind of larger scale. Mm. And I love, one of my favorites is when I saw you do this sweet pea, and it was so perfect and had all the tendrils on it. And it was, what blows my mind is how perfect the pressings are that you do. It's insane.
It's a good practice.
Yeah, it's
but also amazing. There's an awful lot of rejects.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, every time you open a press, you'll probably get five good, really, yeah, excellent pressings. So you have to press a lot more than you want. But I think what sort of fascinated us about the whole flower pressing thing, it had a sort of slightly fusty old Victorian lady, you know, got nothing better to do. But the more we looked into it, the more interesting it became. So, you know, people who went on botanical journeys like Joseph Banks with Captain Cook, all the way to Australia in a sailboat. I mean, the journey of unimaginable hardship to find specimens. And how did they get them back on a sail ship tossing around with salt water? And although they did, you know, they had Wardian cases and things that they kept plants in, most of the plants perished. The four illustrators that they took with them on that journey all died of shipborne illnesses. Yeah. So in the end, they had some illustrations of plants, and they had the seeds and they had the pressing. And the pressing was the thing that survived. And when Amy and I were looking it all up, it was like reading Joseph Banks's instructions how to press a flower. And I said to Amy, nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Identical. Apart from the fact that he was pressing between pages of Paradise Lost and we're pressing in blotting paper. But
this is it. Yeah, I press in this really old dictionary. I've got these really big, fat old dictionaries that I inherited from my granddad. And yeah, they just get stacked on each other. But yeah, it definitely needs to be a bit more pro. But, you know.
Well, no, but I mean, that's how Joseph Banks did it. And they're sitting there in the Natural History Museum to this day and at Kew, immaculate. Slightly, obviously, a loss of colour, but still incredibly beautiful to look at.
But you have, like you say, brought it into the modern day with very stylish frames and on lovely quality paper, and just and as Vic said, keeping all those lovely details in and keeping it really simple. And it's obviously working really well, isn't it?
They're so popular. They really are. And we just love doing it. We're completely obsessed with pressing. We just love doing it. The more we do it, the more people are inquiring about it and things. We're now doing an exhibition this summer at Time in the Cotswolds. So we're working on some much more ambitious pieces, basically. So we're working on a much bigger scale. We're experimenting with some new new things, new ideas. Wow.
Well, gosh, they're really big pressings. Mm. Oh, that's going to look
big
amazing.
Competitions, but we're also working with an amazing foundation in Madrid called Factomate, who make artworks for people like Anish Kapoor, amazing. But Adam Lowe, who runs that, is obsessed with pressed flowers, nature printing, botanicals. And we're working on 3D printing. So it's a pressed flower, but it's printed, but it has all the detail of the original species, but it will never fade.
Wow. I don't even, so that's like with a 3D printer then, printing.
Yeah, they scan the images basically. So they put it through, they put the pressed flower specimens through a 3D scanner to record all the data, and then they photograph them at super high res, and then they merge those two things together. So they merge the 3D scan, which has got all its data, all its lumps and bumps, all its bits, and then they merge that with the photograph, and then they print that through a 3D printer. So it's layers and layers and layers of ink.
Wow. And so this is going to be for another exhibition.
Yeah, this summer.
And that's the one in the Cotswolds.
Yeah.
Right. So that's going to be our first showing of them. But I mean, we've been working on this project for 3 years. I think I met Adam at Freeze in 3 years ago. And we've been working on, you know, getting the process right. But the thing about pressed flowers is that over time, you've slowed the process right down. If you cut a flower, it's dying. It's got a limited amount of time to live. By pressing it, you've preserved it. But the colour over time will slowly leach out of it. Mm. And that can make for very many beautiful stages, you know, as it changes, but it is still changing. Whereas what we're doing with Adam is more like nature printing from, you know, the last century, mm-hmm. Alois Auer and people like that, where they press something and it's got all the detail, but it also holds its colour.
Oh, I can't wait to see that. I wrote down where that exhibition was. I've written down the dates of it, and we'll put that all in the show notes as well.
What
are you two going to be there for any of the days of the exhibition?
We're doing workshops down there, and we're doing a couple of talks and things. So I think it's all on the Time website, or they're about to launch the workshops and stuff. So
perfect.
Yeah, we'll be up and down there quite a few times.
We'll see you there. I want to see these prints. And are these prints going to be things that you will then be selling through your website as well? Or are they
hopefully
more just for exhibition?
We're gonna see how they how it goes there. It's like a little soft launch of the idea. So
excellent.
I hope we'll be able to exhibit them in a gallery, because you know, this is like taking it to the next level, and I mean, huge fun. But of course, meanwhile, back at the studio, the whole rest of life has, you know, parties have started. We just done a lovely big installation for Stella McCartney of Dancing Tulips, you know, a tulip party, Amy called it, didn't you?
A tulip party.
It was so fun, because you know how tulips do that whole thing over the week, you know, they started off like this and then they all threw their petals around, and every time you come into the shop in the morning it would look like they'd all been out on the razz tonight.
What else have we got? We've got the British Flowers Week at Garden Museum coming up. That's
yes,
about that.
And
yes,
the Time exhibition all happening at the same time.
So the exhibition in the Cotswolds is going to be on at the same time as the British Flowers Week as well?
Not quite. They're just all being installed at the same time and things. Right, so busy week.
So we're coming to see the exhibition, the British Flowers Week, and at the Garden Design Museum. We've just got general tickets, so I think we're going up on the Thursday or something. So we can't wait to see what you're going to do there.
Neither can we.
how does that work then? How does that work? So you're using British flowers, obviously. Mm-hmm. So do you have like a rough idea about what you're going to create, but then you have to see what's actually available?
Well, we're doing a bit of a peony party for this one.
Nice.
So yeah, we've got a supplier. And it's the only thing that we're not sure of is we want a specific colour. we don't know if that's going to be. That all depends on the weather, because it depends on when they're out. So
yeah,
that's the thing that we can't control so much.
Are you given a theme that you have to work to? Is that, have they got, you got a theme this year? Is that top top secret?
No, it's healing, the theme this
healing.
Year. Healing. Yeah. Yeah. Which makes sense with the whole pandemic, doesn't it, really?
For absolutely.
Sure. And yeah, how has the pandemic been in terms of business?
Tough.
For you. Yeah.
Really tough. Everything stopped. So when the first lockdown, everything ground to a halt. We stopped the edit for a while just because we thought, well, everything's got to stop. So obviously flower side of things stopped because no events, no deliveries, no nothing. And then the edit, we realized that we could actually keep going because just one of us are going to the studio and do the orders. And actually at that time, people were kind of looking at their houses and thinking, oh, I might want some artwork for my walls. Or so actually the edit was quite good, and we did kind of online workshops on Instagram and stuff, and so that was all okay. But yeah, flowers is
massive at flower pressing. I mean, I pressed everything I saw, you know. Amazing. My poor garden was completely decimated, but you know, that was something to do.
And then we thought, this is a great opportunity to write a proposal for a book, so we did that.
Well, we're really excited. Obviously, a lot of it's top secret as to what. When obviously you're only in the initial stages of writing it at the moment. When can we, you know, when is this, when it's going to be published? When can we buy it?
Hopefully next spring.
Oh,
April, yeah. But I think, I mean, we've just delivered the first draft to the publishers, and we're waiting for our, you know, to get our.
Our homework
with red crosses all over it. But it's been a fun journey. And I think one of the things about the pandemic and lockdown and everything is it has given us a lot of time to think about the business and where we want to go. And, you know, sometimes when we look back over what we were doing this time 2 years ago or 3 years ago, it's shocking how much work we were doing. And you're thinking maybe there are different ways of running the business that isn't quite so incredibly hard work and stressful, and maybe you concentrate on things that you find really beautiful and exciting. And we're doing the Bullring Gate this year at Chelsea in September, but obviously we devised a scheme for May and now it's September, so you know, but quite, I mean, it gives you a lot of anxiety, but it also sort of gets you out of bed in the morning, and it's stress is, you know, it's part of being a successful businesswoman, I fear. You know, I don't think there's any way of doing these things without being quite stressed.
No, but I think you've got to, there's a bit of, you've got to like the stress a little bit. Like, yeah. I know people say they don't like it, but if you thrive on stress. So I just want to say, you guys did the Bullring Gate at Chelsea in 2019. Was that the first time you'd done it?
No, we did the London Gate.
Yeah. And so now you've got the other gate to do.
Yeah.
Terrifying. I've never been so frightened in my life. I was walking up, you know, and the plants were being delivered, and also because we're florists, you know, so although, you know, I'm a keen amateur gardener, you know, the idea of doing a whole planted curtain of flowers on the London Gate is so frightening. I was nearly sick. We talked it out and, you know, got an amazing team of people. I mean, never think this all comes from one place. You know, it's always about the amazing team of people. We have this amazing team of people, Layla Watts, has made a lot of our sort of what I call high wire floristry, you know, model making and stuff for us, was making all these bees out of dried flowers for us and everything. We had amazing people, but nevertheless, the first day of Chelsea, and I was waiting for the delivery. And Amy, what were you doing? Something massive.
Something else that was huge. I think it was that
wedding
time
in France.
Yeah, we did an enormous wedding in France. We'd just done Sketch. It was that kind of crazy, crazy month where everything happened.
So I was on my own waiting for the plants to arrive. Amy was in France with a team of, you know, 30 people doing a huge flower wedding with Talina. So I didn't really have my loving crew around me. And I was walking through Chelsea and everybody was trundling in, looking really as if they knew what they were doing. I thought, what the hell am I doing? I didn't even know how to do this. And I, you know, there was a living wall. I've never done a living wall in my life. I'm practically crying. And then a friend of ours who used to work at Jam Jar, actually, called Tilly Dallas, he's a gardener, garden designer and gardener now, and she was helping with it. And she turned up with my niece and they were like, oh, all looks lovely. And they were very jolly. And because they're young and they don't know how wrong things can go. But it all worked out. And then, of course, you do feel bloody proud, you know.
Yeah. That
you've knocked it out of the bag. But it was terrifying.
I think it was. Sorry, Jess. I was going to say, I think that the how you feel after an event and that adrenaline you feel far outweighs all of the stress and the tears and the worry of what you were doing on the lead up to it. Yeah. It's all about that end, isn't it? And you think,
yeah, well, you know it.
Sure. It's, yeah. I think that's why we all do it.
Yeah, and also through doing so many installations and different floristry things, there is an answer to every problem, isn't there? You know, every florist has got a good toolbox of wires and cable ties and all that kind of stuff, and if you've got a team around you can work it out, even if things look like they're going to be a disaster for a while.
Definitely, you can't be scared of hard work, and you've just got to trust the people around you. And there's always an answer. It might how scary.
Yeah. Well, if you need some help installing things in September, me and Vic will come down. Oh, honestly. Write that down. We'll come and do the arch. Yeah. That would be amazing.
But we did an event the other day. Well, we did a photo shoot the other day in a beautiful place, and Talina made beautiful flowers. And we were all up there sort of helping away, and we were a bit short of blossom. So Amy and I went out and sort of knocked on people's doors and said, could we cut a piece of your blossom or tree, you know? Well, and at the end of it, loaded everything back into the van and went away. And we bought lunch. We sat down for lunch together and we all felt really flat. And I said, you know, it's just not the same, is it? When you're just doing it for yourself, for a photo shoot, because part of the pleasure of our job is when people come in and say, wow, you know, thank you so much, that's so beautiful, or, you know, or what you hope they say. And that is a big, it gives you a lot of I don't know, what's the word, you know, self-worth, I suppose, or, you know, feeling like you're doing something that's good and useful. And floristry is that useful, but, you know, if you're making people happy, then that got to be one of the most useful things on earth, I think.
Yeah, it is useful. Like you say, it makes people feel happy. It does fill people with joy. It's the, you know, natural product, and you know, it's a really opulent, excessive, you know, thing to have in your house. And I think that makes it all the more special as well. I always like to have flowers in my house, and especially last summer when the garden looked so nice and I should have left them in the garden, I was hacking them down for a vase.
And things only come into my house and then just die off because I don't change the water. So I often don't bring
Beg your pardon. That's shocking.
Yeah. I know, right? Disgusting.
You probably leave leaves in the water as well, do you?
No, not quite that bad. I just forget to top the water up and change it. They just die off. But you know, everything's fine. As long if it's in the studio, it's getting looked after. If it comes into the house, it's like a death wish, really.
Yeah. We all know that one, actually.
Yeah. So how's the rest of the year looking? So weddings are starting, they've started up again. Are you insanely busy for the rest of the year? How's it all looking for you?
June is insane. Like everything's happening in June, which is great. And then we've just, we have got a lot of weddings booked in. So we're doing loads of wedding proposals at the moment, which is exciting. And then there's Chelsea and stuff. So it is looking pretty busy. I think we've just got to go with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not where we were because you're not getting weddings for 500 people in France, sadly. But you are getting, I mean, there is really interesting stuff going on, and, you know, it is growing all the time. And I think that it will grow back up again, you know. I'm sure it will.
We're getting some interesting stuff. Like over, I know you asked about the pandemic before, and it did all stop, but we had to adapt a bit and we had to think, what else can we offer here? And we ended up, Talina actually ended up getting Netflix in as a client. So what we did for them was they had virtual screenings for all of their shows coming out. So instead of, you know, inviting people to a screening, they had virtual ones. So what we did was presented an idea for doing virtual hampers for their screenings. So for each of their things, so say if the Crown was coming out or whatever, we designed a hamper and kind of put that all together for them in a beautiful little package, and sent that out to them with all lovely things like, you know, sparkling wine and all these lovely things that we sourced for them, and sent it out with a beautiful bunch of flowers. And that was a kind of mad job that we had that was completely adapted to the pandemic. And now we seem to be getting, because of that, some more of those jobs. So that's kind of an interesting thing that's changed, in that we've been able to offer this other thing that we never knew we could do or never thought about before.
And so, isn't specifically flower related?
No, it's not anymore, really. We obviously tried to get flowers in there because that's our thing.
No, we always do get flowers in, but the point is that at the minute you say, oh, this is, we only do this and this, you've kind of stopped your business. And I think I felt so proud of everybody. Like, everybody was thinking, like, what can we do? How can we change things? How can we make business out of a pretty desperate situation? And especially, you know, when the market was closed and everything. But it, you know, human beings are very adaptable and they are on the whole positive, and flowers are a very positive thing. It's something people need, I think. You know, I think the reconnection with nature that happened over the pandemic, for not just for florists but for human beings all over the place, you know, that suddenly people were watching the trees come out, the listening to the birds sing and everything, and reconnecting a bit. And I think the pandemic has given us some lessons, you know. If I just hope the hell we learn from them, because we're so bad at learning from.
Yeah, we tend to do something for about a year and then we completely forget that all happened and go back to normal. But there's a bit of a slower pace, not a slower pace, because you still want to be working and things like that, but you're understanding what's important to you as an individual, aren't you, more so? And like you said before, thinking about working smarter and doing things that really bring you joy rather than cramming everything in and knackering yourself out all the time.
Yeah, because we obviously, with things stopping and then gradually starting again, you want to take on as much as you can. You want to take all the jobs that are coming your way. But when you stop and kind of breathe for a second, it's like, hang on a minute, are we doing this in the most sensible way? But it's difficult not to take on everything. It's really hard.
And I tend to, you know, somebody says they want a plant repotted, and I say, oh, I'll run round and do that. And Amy says, you don't need to do that, Melissa. You know, 67 years old, you're charging across London. Pot up somebody's Ficus lyrata. It's not actually necessary.
No.
And you're going to make a quid. And it costs that, because I drive across London.
What is happening is that
You know.
What is happening is that we're getting loads of workshops, actually, aren't we? That's the thing that's really we've noticed in the last few weeks. Talina started doing one-to-one workshops, and they're getting really booked up. It's really good. So obviously people wanting to either have a career change or just to get out and do something lovely for a day.
She's such a good teacher. You know, she's very patient. She goes through steps, but things step by step. And yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a, I mean, I'd like to do one, actually.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Yeah, I think as well, I think people have had, you know, you will have a lot of career change, because I think people have, you know, everyone's kind of had that pause and they're like, I just can't deal with going back into the office again. That's it. I'm going to be a florist. Here we go. And yeah, I'm sure you're super busy on your workshops. Do you do one-to-ones and group classes for florists?
We used to do group classes. We've not got any booked in at the moment, because I think we're just going to concentrate on this one-to-one.
Yeah.
and see how it goes, because I think they're really fun for Talina because she loves it. Yeah. And really fun for whoever's coming as well. And then I'm doing flower pressing workshops again, which is really fun.
I noticed you've got quite a few of them on of dates on the website, so they must be really popular.
Yeah, they just keep selling out. It's great. Yeah. We're doing some giant time, and they're really fun to do. I love them.
All the people that are listening are thinking, oh, I think I'll be a florist. I just want to say two things. Weight of water, smelly buckets.
Yes.
You know, because people think it's all so lovely and so, oh, and I'm just going to take a few stems and pop them in and everything. And there is so much physical labour in this job, and also so many freezing cold early morning starts, you know.
There are, and I think it's important for people that are starting to look at floristry as a career to kind of be honest with themselves about actually where they want to go with it. Because if you want to be a massive event florist, it is back-breaking work. It is, you know, with teams and teams of people. But if you want to be a kitchen table bouquet delivery and seasonal workshop florist, that's a very different thing, isn't it? So it can be nice and playing with flowers, but most of it is mechanics, lifting, van driving. You know, if you've got those three things, then you're
sweeping,
loads of sweeping.
Yeah. Not if you're me, just leave it to the end of the day. Leave it to the end of the day, grow about 4 foot in stature, and then shove it all in a bin after.
It's exhausting, isn't it? It's completely exhausting, but you feel like you've done a good day's graft at the end of the day, I think.
Yeah. Always.
Listen, I think us florists are a passionate bunch, and no matter how hard the work and how stressful it can be, we're still doing it and we're still loving it.
Absolutely.
Can I just quickly say about your wonderful wrapping paper that you've got on your web shop? Is that something you've, because you've got a few things that you do in collaboration, haven't you? So you sell that lovely Lancaster and Cornish ribbon. And then you've got the, is it Rachel Dean or Dine, the plaster cast things? And then your wrapping paper, is that your own design? Because we love it.
Yeah. You know what that's from? That's from when we did Rakes Progress. That is very poor. We did a roll of wallpaper, pressed flower wallpaper on the wall. So we pasted wallpaper to the wall and then glued each individual little pressed flower onto that and made a whole wall of wallpaper. And that print is from that.
Lovely. It's just beautiful. And I love that you make the product out of something else. Everything you do is very, very linked and very stylized. And I just wanted to say, well done.
Thank you.
Well, I always think you have to say that, you know, you are only as good as the rest of your team. And we have, our core team, which is Talina, Amy, myself. Then we've got India, who works with us on the Jam Jar edit, who is the most amazing designer and makes most of the pieces art.
And Ella. Don't forget Ella.
Ella, who basically runs the studio, and she's just endlessly calm. She's never flustered by anything. I'm getting more and more uncalm and anxious as I get older, and she's just always, don't worry, Melissa, we'll sort it out. And I think, often it's, it all seems like it's all coming from one person, but actually there's so much creative input, organizational input from all these people. It's a small amount of people, but my God, we can't manage that. And my daughter Scarlett, who comes in and packs up, I mean, it's the dreariest job on earth, but she comes in every time smiling, telling jokes, laughing, lifts all our spirits up. And everybody is so important. It's just, it's impossible to say that everything would be as good if it wasn't for every single person. Everybody makes part of that jigsaw puzzle that is Jam Jar Flowers. And, I feel like weeping. I'm so proud of them all.
That is such a wonderful thing to say. That is lovely.
Well, it's true.
I think we can all
it does take a village to do it all, doesn't it? And without the the moving parts that all need to be there, it all ends up going kaput. So yeah, it's so important to have people you can trust, people who are creative, people who lift you up, people who support you and support each other. And it's, yeah, team is hugely important.
Definitely. And then the freelancers bring a new burst of energy, which we all need sometimes,
lovely freelancers come flying in.
That's it. Just when you've got to a point where you're like, oh, I just can't do it anymore. And it's like fresh blood.
You need it. You need that energy.
Yeah.
And I think all florists seem to know how to make a good cup of tea and to bring biscuits, don't they?
Yeah. We seem to have developed a biscuit shelf in our studio. It's very dangerous. It only just happened after a long time of not having biscuits. It's very dangerous.
I was actually freelancing, and I haven't freelanced for so long, and I really missed it. And I was freelancing on Thursday and Friday with Liz at Blue Sky Flowers, and she was like, have you seen the naughty drawer? And she opened up this massive drawer. You should have seen it. I was like, oh my god, there was everything. There was like chocolate and biscuits, and seriously bad. It's a good job I'm not there every single day. That would be enormous.
I love that. The naughty drawer. I'm glad I haven't got a naughty drawer at home, because it would be an empty naughty drawer.
Well, that's the trouble, isn't it? It does empty very quickly.
It does. And yeah, COVID and lockdown has definitely, taken its toll. We don't need a naughty drawer. I need a drawer full of salad.
Thank you so much to Melissa and Amy for such a wonderful conversation. We absolutely loved chatting with you both. And don't forget to pop over to our show notes to find out how you can book a slot to see their beautiful exhibition, The Nature of Time. And that runs until Sunday, the 12th September, 2021. So we'll be back with more Flowery Chat next Thursday. Until then, have a great week, and thanks so much for joining us. We really hope that you've enjoyed this episode of the Girl Flower Podcast. Please subscribe, share and review on your podcast provider, and help us to reach out and connect with other florists, growers and enthusiasts.